Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello, it's Friday the 17th of November 2023, and because it's a Friday, it means it's Inside EV's podcast time, which is great. I am, as usual, your host, Alex Goy. Today I am joined momentarily by only fellow Brit, Hazel Southwell. Hello, Hazel, how are you?
This is really exciting. We should just talk about like Peugeots for like a solid 20
Peugeots, Citroens, other UK or Europe only brands, Dacias. We can talk about Dacia Spring.
Oh, we love Dacias.
Yeah. We love Dacias. Dustagram is the Instagram account to follow. we will be intermittently joined.
Actually, are talking about a car that will be only available in Europe.
Yes, we are. I'm very excited about that. We will be intermittently joined by Misco Electric herself, Lacey, but she is currently travelling, and when we last spoke to her, she was on a plane train. So she'll join us once her travel woes have subsided a little bit. Do you know what, Hazel? As Lacey isn't here, shall we jump straight to the Euro car?
Let's
jump straight to the Euro car. So let's get cracking with some EV news.
EV news.
Eurocar news, because the Brits are here. Wahahaha. Renault has announced the new Twingo. I say Renault, it's the Ampere EV group, the sort of Renault's, the Renault groups. We only make EVs and aren't we great? It was announced the other day at a big Ampere meeting. It's allegedly coming in 2026. They say it'll be sub 20,000 euros, or about 100 euros a month. That's sub 22,000 US dollars. What they did say, though, which was the genuinely fascinating, exciting bit, it'll use 10 kilowatts per 100 kilometres, roughly 6.2 miles per kilowatt hour, which is quite incredible. If they do pull that off, it would make it about 50% more efficient than the current small EVs. Now, they gave us just that, basically. That's all we have to go on. It's likely, we reckon, to be based on the CMF-B EV platform, or Ampere Small, as it's known now, which will underpin the Renault 5 and Renault 4 EVs that are coming next year and the year after. Renault 5, I'm very excited about. I drove a prototype of it a while ago, and it was ace. The coolest thing, though, and the thing that I think will make Hazel a very, very happy human being, is that it looks like the original Twingo.
It does. Things that are nice.
Lacey has just joined. Sorry. Hello, Lacey.
We were secretly doing Eurocar news.
We were doing Eurocar
news. That's a good plan.
while the American was away. Sorry, Hazel, carry on. Twingo.
So there's two things that are sort of core to the concept of the Twingo. One of them is stealing aerodynamic plans from other car makers. In order to make, because the original Twingo CD is ridiculously low. It's much, much more aerodynamic than it has any right to be, especially given the tiny budget that it was developed with, because they stole it from Beskyd, which was a Polish car maker that kind of collapsed at the end of the Eastern Bloc. Some people allege
So it is alleged that perhaps
may have been connected to, and that perhaps Renault's alleged 10 million budget or so, like they announced they developed the Twingo with like 2 pence and a packet of crisps, and we're just like, yeah, it's great because we're just like good, but it was also ridiculously fuel efficient because it has a tiny engine. So the efficiency and the low CD, traditional Twingo things. Do I think that it's possible that it could achieve the kind of range that they're talking about? Absolutely. Because if they actually manage the braking, I suspect one of the things they might be doing with this is actually straight up taking the mechanical brakes off. That's not been done on a road car before. It does save a lot of money. It saves some weight. I'll be honest, my Twingo RIP didn't really have brakes anyway, so I don't think they really need them.
Milk bottle tops for calipers, that was basically.
Yeah. But I got an MOT back once which said the brakes worked as intended.
They successfully swapped the vehicle.
I just had some strange balloons.
What was that?
That was very weird.
I liked it.
I enjoyed it.
Hazel moved her hands and a flurry of balloons appeared behind it. Does it work if I do that? Twingo.
My scare quotes about brakes apparently made believe. But yeah, so I think like the overall, this is both true to the original Twingo and a good thing. We need cheap, small, efficient electric cars. This is literally what we're always talking about. 2026 does not seem like an unrealistic deadline for this to be possible. If by then I have the money to buy one of these, I absolutely will. I miss my Twingo.
At the launch, they said, you know, they are aware that there is a need for this thing, which is why it's being developed and turned around quite so quickly. So looking at the story, CEO Luca Di Meo said the Twingo will be the automaker's low-cost answer to Chinese rivals, which obviously they're all coming in. They're coming in at quite great pace, and that's a worry for European and American legacy OEMs, because they're coming in and going, we can make it cheaper, we can make it quicker, we can make it a more appealing proposition. He said that it's you know, this is Renault's answer, and it will be developed in a record 2 years. So how they're going to do that, I don't
know.
Like the original Twingo. I think the record for quickest car development, I think, might be the DeLorean at like 13 months, 14 months, something ridiculous like that. So 2 years is definitely doable.
Are they coming out with the Nissan variant before this one? Because I think they are, if the Micra, they were going to build on this platform. Is that correct?
Oh, that I don't know. I will find out.
Yes, that's true. This is basically, without accusing OEMs of repeating their own history, there may be some borrowing involved in the naissance of this car.
You're part sharing? Well, I never.
Oh, no. Yes. Let's call it part sharing. Let's call it synergies within the Renault-Nissan group.
What I love about it is that it keeps the look of the original Twingo, which always looked so happy and so great. We never got that in the UK. It was always... It was kind of a weird little treat.
You never got that in the UK.
Officially, the UK never got it. The steering wheel was never put on the correct side of the vehicle. You know, the speedometer read kilometres, not miles. We never got it officially. I love the look of it. It was always such a treat to see them. It will be super tiny. The efficiency really does it for me, because it means the battery can be tiny. So say they stick a 22 kilowatt hour battery in it, that's a 200 mile range car ish, give or take, or 120 odd, thinking about it. So hang on, my maths is off. 120, 180 something.
It would be over 200 range.
It would be a usable vehicle, which all of a sudden just makes it perfect. It's the city car problem gone away. Like the Citroen C3 a few weeks ago. It's cheap. It's got a banging range, and it looks good. And this does look good. We're entering a kind of an era of car design at the moment where either you get we're going to talk about this in a minute with your Lucids, but either you get this design that's sort of safe and familiar, but it has a few hallmarks. Or if you think back to like 2004, 2005, when manufacturers are going, sod it, let's go completely retro. So we got that the retro Mustang, we got the Fiat 500 at the turn of the century, we had the Mini, we got all these manufacturers just looking back. And Renault is, you know, very much guilty as charged. The upcoming Renault 5 looks mega, but it looks like a futuristic Renault 5. Same with the 4, and now with the Twingo. I think it's mega. Question is, Lacey, if there was one of these on your doorstep, how many would you order for Turo?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, honestly, I love this little thing. I like small little electric cars. It's just sad we don't really have many here in the States because people don't buy them. They buy your guys' favorite big honking pickup trucks and SUVs. But, you know, I love it. It's like, it kind of reminds me a little. I mean, there's so many of these little tiny electric cars that you guys have overseas in like Europe and in China that I'm so enamored with, and I wish we got them here. But I would probably, I mean, depending on what the cost would be, it's like 20 something, I thought I saw.
Yeah. So
was the price point?
About 22,000 US, they reckon, with current exchange rates. So give or take inflation, it could be 30. But
that's pretty decent, but probably, I don't know, wouldn't qualify for any incentive. So that would kind of be its hiccup, is a little bit pricey for what it is, but I still like it. It's so cute.
It's cool. I adore it. Anyway, now Hazel. Now we have.
We should go back to real cars that people want.
should we go back to some honking great SUVs? Mm. As such, Lucid this week at the LA Auto Show, which is going on right now. By all accounts, there are some cars there. I think it's fair to say the LA Show's heyday might be behind it a little bit. But at the show, Lucid announced the Gravity. This is the car that a lot of people have been waiting for, because the Air, of course, is incredibly good, incredibly fast, but also incredibly expensive and quite far out of a lot of people's reach. Whereas the Gravity, not quite so. It's described in the press bump as not just a luxury SUV, it's a powerhouse. Roar. It's a 7-seat SUV. They haven't given official figures yet, but they're planning for 440 miles plus when it comes to range. There's no official battery details. They say about half the size of some competitors, though. Our man Patrick George on the show floor, he can't join us today because he's traveling from LA to back to home, managed to get out. It's approximately 120 kilowatt hours. 0-60 pegged for 3.5 seconds. It's got a 900 volt architecture. It can tow. It can tow 1,500 pounds. It can hold 1,500 pounds. It can tow 6,000. They say on a 350 kilowatt charger, 200 miles of charge in about 15 minutes. The interior is kind of funky. Really like that. You know, it's got the second and third row seats fold flat, which is cool. The driver, the instrument display, that is something else, because I know, you know, the prevalence of giant screens is not something we can ignore anymore. It's a thing because they're big and they're cheap and they're easy to put in. But the driver gets a 34-inch curved screen, which is quite something.
I have a huge problem with that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll reveal the price. Sub 80k, depending. I that's the target at least. And it's got a really cool frunk that you can sit in, and in the press thing, you can sit on the LA beach and watch the sun go down with your friends in the front of your car. Hazel, as you have a thought, what is your problem with the 34-inch screen?
I'm sorry, but there is no way that you can read stuff off a 34-inch screen and have your eyes on the road. in any adequate way with periphery vision and stuff. That is much too wide for a driver's field of vision. I would much rather see stuff that was cleverly displayed in the way that a few OEMs, BMW have a really good version of this, have managed to kind of project it into the windshield so you're not distracted. This is just, that's just lazy and clumsy and actively dangerous for drivers. 34 inches is so much. If you're looking below your line of sight, in term, because you have to be, because otherwise it would be smack in front of where you'd be looking at the road, that is just distracted driving. Like, yeah, I don't care what information it has on it. Like, it's just not realistic for anyone to be able to look at information across that broader, because, you know, that is twice my laptop screen. No, more than twice. It's 2.5 of my laptop.
Yeah. Across 80 miles an hour on a motor. Sorry, 70 miles an hour on a motor.
Yeah. Like, that is absolutely unrealistic that you would be using your periphery, which you do have to use, that you'd be looking in the mirrors. I know that, like, driver aids, and I'm sure this will have a very, you know,
a very comprehensive
advanced ADAS system and whatever, but I genuinely think that should be illegal on anything that is a car that you are meant to be actively driving. And I know people will be like, you're so, like, in the past. No, that is not something you should be looking at. If you are in charge of a vehicle and you are around other people in charge of vehicles and anyone else, like, just generally.
Lacey, what do you think?
I agree with a lot of what you're saying, mostly regarding the head-up display. Like, I am a huge advocate of a HUD. Like, I wish every car could have it, or at least have an option for it. And I think especially when you get into the luxury category, when you are competing, and I mean, you guys have heard me say this time and time again, like, Lucid should be direct competing with BMW and Mercedes, those high quality luxury brands. And to have missing technology like a HUD, I think is for their second vehicle, I think they should have gone ahead and tried to find a supplier or something to provide that technology. So I'm not as bothered as, like, a big screen, because I think I'm just used to it, but I get your point of safety. Like, I agree with you that it's not as safe as an experience that you would get by having a head-up display. The other thing is voice commands, because if I can do everything through voice command, then I don't care. I don't need to touch the screen or look at it or anything like that. I can use the HUD and the voice commands, and that will fulfill my needs for the driving experience. But a lot of times, like, there's very few people that have good voice command systems. I will say, I think they're integrating with Alexa in some regard. So, and that system is pretty good with voice commands, but it is still limited. So, yeah, that's as far as my take on that side of things. A couple things that I liked about this. I mean, I do think that the form factor is great. Amazing towing, which I think is underserved in the EV space, especially if you do combine it with this 440 plus miles of range when we're talking about the Gravity's high-end trim. I even if you're not towing up to 6,000 pounds, there are people with an active lifestyle that want to have a hitch rack or maybe to be able to carry extra cargo with them with a receiver-mounted rack of some sort. So I think that's cool. I noticed that when they had it on display here and had people walking around it, they had a surfboard and a mountain bike or something like that in the back of the car with it closed, which is also cool because when you do add a hitch-mounted receiver, if you don't have any other people that you're bringing with you or anything like that, you can have the option to put it in and it doesn't compromise your range. From my experience, when I'm traveling, road tripping with when I had my Model Y, putting those two e-bikes on the back of my car would be about a 20% range hit. So I like the fact that it has enough clearance in the cargo area to be able to, and you do have to take the wheel off, but I think people are going to be somewhat comfortable with doing that kind of thing, but not compromising the aero if you don't want to, if you don't need the passenger space. And also, sorry, I'll wrap up here soon, but one thing that I noticed is some videos that my buddy Ryan at the Kilowatts had posted. He was, like, going through there, but I haven't seen anybody talk about this. I haven't watched too many videos, but when he brought the video and his camera into the second row seat with that bike and the surfboard in the back, that second row was folded down, and it looked like there was like a rail system that was embedded into the back of that second row of the back of the seat. And the mountain bike was, the wheel was off, but on the front fork at the wheel axle, it had like an attachment piece that secured it to that rail. And I just thought that that, like, you need more little things like that in the Frunk experience if you are going to stand out in competing in this space with other products that are really good, that you might have other disadvantages, like not a very, you know, robust dealer network, things like that. So that's just my take. I saw a couple cool things. I like this. Design-wise, whatever. I like the specs on it mostly.
Design-wise, whatever. Well, so on the screen thing, I'm just looking at the images of it. You know, the steering, the top of the steering wheel is quite low. So I'm curious to see how a person would sit in it, or how I would sit in it, because I am a small person. I'm like 5'8", 5'9", on a good day. That's what I used to put on Tinder anyway. You know, if you can't see over it, then yeah, there'll be a huge issue with that. But yeah, I want to try it before I completely, and I want to see what they do with it. Because the stuff in the video, you know, one side, it's basically two screens merged into one. So yeah, I'm curious to see what they do with it. The other point I want to bring up by it, I wanted to talk about its design anyway, but a chum of mine over on Twitter, Nipam Shah, he said, surely it's not just me that thinks these two look remarkably familiar. And he's put a picture of the Lucid Gravity and the new Renault Espace up. Because they do kind of look the same in that they're both generic tubes, you know, big, high sided, long roofed. Like they're not hugely dissimilar, really. They're, you know, as with any car like that, you need to hide the visual weight of the car. So there are, you know, there's that kick point at the bottom of the doors. There's a strong shoulder line, but to kind of tuck the bottom in and make the windows seem a little bigger than perhaps they actually are. But I just find it amazingly generic. Nipham has jumped into the comments, said hashtag not an SUV. I agree. I don't think it's an SUV. I think it's just a lump of car.
See, I have no problem with bringing back minivans. I have been saying for time that if we are going to make large EVs, then we might as well bring back minivans. Easy to hide the batteries in, huge amounts of space. You can do anything with them. Why does everything have to be an SUV? A factor about minivans is that they were not luxury cars.
No, they are cars for people who like having children or do a lot of things that require lots of space, or dogs who care little for aesthetics and care for what they can do with a vehicle. They're functional cars.
Yeah, which I'm all for. Like, I realise I'm a middle-aged woman and that this is entirely playing to type, but, you know, Espace, great fucking car. But can you stick a luxury price tag on an Espace, even the one they did up for F1? Absolutely not.
Well, even the one with the Formula One engine in it.
Yeah.
See, I don't know, because like the Urus, or however the heck you say that, is pretty popular in the Lambo lineup. I mean, this is bigger, but I think performance and that price tag, it could probably work. I don't know.
The Urus is an SUV, like unashamedly so, and it shares its platform with loads of other SUVs. But I think it's also a bit smaller.
Wagon-esque.
Yeah, it's like a big estate, and that's being kind. But then you look at the thing is, I know people love Lucid. I know they adore it. But if I was to see one of those in the street, I'd be like, oh, cool, and car.
Do mums love Lucid? Mums think, I want a car? Like, and I'm saying this, like, again, as a middle-aged woman, I am not going to buy a car based on the fact that it can launch so fast that my eyeballs fall out in order to put my kids in it.
Well, I mean, you also have like Escalade is super popular here. So like, I don't know, I could see some people, it doesn't have the same cargo capacity, but I could see some people potentially like Navigator or Escalade customers that would be somewhat interested. I think the problem a lot of the time with a company like Lucid is that already you're not a very well-known brand. So you're combating just to get your name out there, but you also need to do things in order to make customers aware of you. And I think those higher range vehicles are appealing to those types of customers, but I just think that not a lot of people know about them. So I think that's going to be like their main struggle for a really long time in getting the manufacturing process going, which also was interesting because this isn't the same platform as the Air. So I wonder as far as like cost for them, how that impacts, because obviously the stock is like a huge thing over here. Like people are upset because they're burning so much money. Yes, they're backed by the Saudis, but if you're burning that much cash, that's tough, you know?
Actually, the Saudi thing is a really good point that I was just thinking through. And yes, this is a car from the Middle East. This is a car to sell in Dubai.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You are not wrong. And on that, Lucid Gravity, we sort of like it, but we'll see. We'll see what it's like when it comes out. There is more news, though. Cadillac has finally revealed formally the Optiq luxury compact SUV. It sits below the Lyriq. It'll be so the entry level to Cadillac's EVs. You can have it with a single or dual motor. The rear drive setup comes with 201 or 241 horsepower. The all-wheel drive 283. It looks decent. It shares a platform with the Equinox and the various Buick Electros. It's due, we reckon, it's labeled 2024 model year, so either very end of this year, though we are running out of year, or early next year. Price wise they say as the entry level it will almost certainly undercut the Lyriq's $58,590 entry fee. So what do we think? The Gravity is a lump of car. I really dig in Cadillac's design language, except I'm going to spoil it for you when I say that if you look at the front, if you look at its front end very on, you know, in Sesame Street where Bert goes all grumpy and his eyebrows just become one solid lump. It looks like Angry Bert. Hazel.
It sure does look like a car. If I asked like the most basic AI, and I have a feeling I did this a while ago, to generate a new electric car for like the current year, I think it would probably come up with something like this. It's red. That's nice.
Cars go faster.
Cadillac have announced two things this week. One of them is this. The other is that it's going to become a Formula One power unit manufacturer by 2026. Neither excites me particularly. All seems realistic. I don't believe they're going to make them in the time that they're talking about this coming out, because GM just do not seem capable of making electric cars in those timeframes.
Oh, Lord.
It's got some funky headlights. That's cool. It's nice to see another brand releasing an electric car. There we go. I'll be nice. I'm going to stop being villainous for 5 seconds.
You've stopped twirling your evil person mustache. Lacey, what do you think? If we have you, it looks like you're on a jet bridge ready to get on an aeroplane. So if we have you, what do you think of the Optiq? Oh, no, and she's gone. Signal woes. I mean, yeah, it's one of those cars that I think will do quite well, simply because it's got the right badge, it's got the right look, it seems to have the right specs.
It sure is there.
And it sure is there, but you can picture people being like, well, I want an efficient, good-looking, quickish SUV. I'll have the Cadillac. There's one on the lot. I'll have that one. The deal will be good.
Well, and that will be the factor. It's whether they are actually on the lot. It's whether GM can sort out its production issues, because no one is going to pre-order this. I'm sorry. like, this is not something where everyone's like, damn, I need to put down a deposit tomorrow for this thing. There is nothing that exciting about it in that respect. It's not a Cybertruck. It's not, you know, even the Lucid thing, or like something where it's got some USP. It is like the anti-USP. In fact, it's more the lowest common denominator. So yes, if they have these on lots, if they're making them in volume, if they're making them at the price point that they're promising them at, and if people can turn up and easily be like, oh yes, one of those, then yes, they'll go. But that is the current battle that OEMs are up against, because yes, people do want basically generic cars, and they want them to be available. But you need to get that production line out the factory doors, for that to be a possibility.
Yeah, no, you're right. I entirely agree. I think, we'll see what happens. But so far, GM has optimistically announced another electric SUV. Let's see if people buy it. Moving on to something a little weirder that I rather enjoyed this week. Edmunds, they of testing many, many vehicles in weird and wonderful and wacky ways, has done an experiment. It's tested to see how fast or how many miles per hour vehicles can charge at. And it's basically crowned the Ioniq 6 rear-wheel drive as the fastest charging vehicle because it can charge at 868 miles per hour. Which takes a little bit of getting your head around. So it's the Ioniq 6, then an EV6.
So if you charged an Ioniq 6 for an hour solidly at its maximum capacity for charging, it would have 862 miles of range.
So it took me a little while to find out how they did it, because It sounds really fanciful, doesn't it? It sounds like this, well, clearly you just plug it in and it'll go. So the way they did it was they found the average kilowatt charge capacity, and then divided that by the Edmunds tested consumption, and then times that by 100.
So they didn't test the charging, they used the average charging.
Yeah, so here's the thing from the Edmunds website. The calculations for miles per charging hour is carried out by dividing the average charging power in kilowatts by the Edmunds tested consumption figure, kilowatt hours used for every 100 miles traveled, or kilowatt hours per 100 miles, then multiplying the result by 100 to arrive at the miles per hour unit. It's a measure used to gauge the charging efficiency of electric vehicles, providing insights on how many miles an EV can potentially cover per hour of charging. So, yeah. The data, fair play to them. If we have a note, sorry, they tested 43 cars, so the chart is quite large.
Edmunds testing is really thorough. They take them on average speed. They take them through traffic.
They do not mess around.
Testing is very, very thorough.
Yeah, it's sort of consumer Bible stuff. So with the where are we? Hang on, the chart is very big. So the Ioniq 6, let me find the data they've got for that. The one at the top of the chart I'm on at the minute, the EV win. So Edmunds tested miles per charging hour, 769. Average time to add 100 miles of range was 7 minutes and 48 seconds. Edmunds tested consumption is 26 kilowatt hours per 100 miles. Then they said the manufacturer estimated peak charging. Kia says 240. Edmunds found 236.
So they did test the charging.
Yeah. Okay. And the average charging power that the car got is 200 kilowatt hours. So they basically plugged all that in, did a lot of maths, and worked out this sort of top 10 or top 43. Top 10 as it stands: Ioniq 6 limited rear drive, Kia EV6 wind rear drive, Ioniq 6 limited all-wheel drive, Taycan 4S, EV6 GT line, Ioniq 5 dual motor, Merc EQS 450+, Genesis G80, Taycan GTS, Model 3 long range, and that's your top 10. And that goes from the Model 3 at 569 miles per hour, which is strange to say, all the way up to the Ioniq 6 at 868 miles per hour. Now, as someone's just Carl in San Diego has just popped into the comments, but I appreciate the Edmunds efficiency ranking page. They should put it above the range page, which really we should put stuff like that above range, because it's more important. How can you out of a smaller battery, if you can get more miles, that's a better solution than just adding more battery. We've spoken about that before. But I think the interesting thing about it is that this presents data in a way that is more easy to understand for a lot of people, because one of the big problems that I have with people who don't get EVs, who don't get cars, you know, they understand petrol goes in, it's turned into gas and you go forwards, whereas they don't understand, right, why, what does 40 kilowatts mean, what does 20 kilowatt hours mean, how does a plug work, why do I have to wait 40 minutes, what's this, what's that, how does it all work? So this at least presents data. You say, well, in this car theoretically you could add 800 miles of range to your car an hour. Obviously you can't do that because you'll destroy the battery, but you could. I really like it. I know it might cause a little bit of trouble on the internet at the minute, but that's just people on the internet. Lacey, what did you make of all of this?
Oh, sorry.
Hi, sorry, guys. Now I'm sitting on the plane, so I apologize. I'll probably dip out earlier. I was boarding sooner than I expected, but
that's all right.
As far as the Cadillac goes, I'll see it when I believe it. And manufacturing-wise, if they can ramp up their EVs, I'll be happy. But when it comes to this stuff, it just shows how dominant Hyundai Motor Group is with their charging, I think. Like, I love to see this new form of showing people how to charge. For the people that don't know, is like my job is training people about EVs, whether that's dealers, the employees at the OEMs, and consumers in general. So I think this is a cool way to show people a little bit more like practical means of displaying that information, like you were saying, Alex, because even when we talk about dealers and training them, they don't understand that what we see on Monroney's are peak rates and not what you get for the full session.
Yeah. It's basically exactly that. I'm kind of blown away by it. You talk about the prevalence of the Hyundai group. Six of the top 10 are from there. It's Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis, and then, you know, you've got a couple of Porsches. Yeah, two Porsches, the Merc EQS, and then a Model 3 long range. And the gap between the lowest ranked in the top 10, the Genesis Electrified G80 is 588, and then the Tesla is 569. The top three, all Hyundai group, and it goes from 868 down to 764.
Genesis is Hyundai as well.
Yes, yeah, it is, yeah. So, you know, their equivalent. I'm surprised the GV60 isn't up there, considering it is an Ioniq 5 and an EV6, but Lucid, our favorite.
Extra insulation.
I was going to say it's heavy. I think that's what bogs it off.
I'm just scrolling through. I'm not sure they tested it because it's not here. A Ford F-150 Lightning Lariat can do 332 miles in an hour. A Rivian, one for Lacey, 312 miles in at 38 and 39. There we are.
Real quick. I just did my first full charging DC fast charging experience from 1% to 100%. If you guys are interested in that on the Max Pack, you can go. I just posted that like yesterday or something like that. So you can go check it out on my x.com page or whatever. But yeah, interesting results.
Oh yeah? Can you give us a hint?
You could tell that there's some thermal issues that Rivian's trying to combat as far as like the temperatures of the battery when it's charging. I mean, I will say I was happy with the speeds that I got, and normally I wouldn't go to 100%, but the point was just to show what the full session would look like for somebody. Yeah. And some people were like, oh my God, because it took an hour and 50 minutes. And they were like, oh my God, I would never. It's like, well, that's not how you would actually. And I prefaced that with the summary that I posted, but some people just think that people are going to be charging up to 100. And especially with my car with 410 miles of range, that's definitely not the case for me on road trips.
You don't need to be bad for the battery. It would be bad. But no, cool. All right. So everyone go and check that out, please. And thank you. Right. So one more little bit of news. Very murka state of news. Back to Lucid. Another generic shape has been spotted, except this time it's a potential pickup, which might cause some consternation for Rivian. The clay model was spotted in a video. And it looks kind of cool. It could be. So the thing is, so far, Lucid has said, we couldn't possibly tell you. Sorry, I need to correct myself. It was the Lucid forum that posted the picture of the clay model parked at that point was potentially the Gravity SUV. Lucid declined to comment on future products, presumably because it wanted everyone to focus on the Gravity and the Air. However, it's noted in the piece that it looks in line with Lucid's design language. It looks pretty slick, but it's also a pickup. As Patrick said in the piece, you know, the answer to a lot of problems is just pickup truck because Murica. So
is it though?
Well, two questions. Does Lucid need a pickup truck? Does it need to have this? And two, what do we think about another EV pickup truck, especially when that bit of the market's still sort of finding its feet? I mean, Rivian's going great guns. The F-150 is going great guns. The Cybertruck, there's been pictures of that this week. We'll discuss that in a minute. But is it necessary? Should Lucid be doing it? Lacey, as an EV pickup owner yourself, what do you think?
I think considering that their powertrain is amazing. So if anyone's going to make a compelling pickup truck that is electric, that has good range, like I think it's Lucid. So I am intrigued by it, but it is in the luxury premium sector. So like how expensive would it be? I would be really intrigued if this happened and I would like to see it, but I really think they should focus. And it's not saying that they aren't, because this is just a clay model, but they need to get like a midsize SUV out the door now, like smaller than the Gravity.
Yeah, I mean the Gravity is vast and looks cool, but yeah, should a pickup be what they're going for? Hazel, what do you think? You were skeptical.
Okay, I'm not American, and no. I can't really understand pickup truck culture in that respect.
There's an Inside EVs exclusive. Hazel Southwood is not an American.
But I have written for America for a long time, and so I sort of I feel like I have some level of grasp on these issues, which is that pickup truck culture is not about buying luxury cars. It is not about spunking the most amount of money you possibly can on some glass roofed thing that has a launch control option. It's about having a car that you can repair yourself. It's about having something that you feel confident you can do everything with. It's about probably having a secondhand something. It's about having something where there's a lot of available parts. Like one of the reasons the F-150 Lightning got so many people excited was because it had that $37,000 price point when it was initially announced. And I don't see where a luxury, what Lacey said, I just do not see where a pickup truck fits into the luxury segment or why. I know, and again, like, yes, the Cybertruck has like a million orders and people are very excited for it. It's not really a pickup truck, and I don't think that's really why people are buying it. So do I see this doing well in like regions where there isn't really any charging infrastructure and people rely on their pickup truck. And this being something that excites them? No. Like, no. There are multiple barriers before anyone would consider a probably what would be over $80,000, $90,000 pickup truck. Like, you could
probably sell
some of these in LA.
There are so many people in Texas, though, that have, like, King Ranch loaded out F-150s. Like, I wish Patrick could get some insight on his, like, Texas experience here, but, like, you'd be surprised how many people load out F-150s in this market. Like, it's insane. They'll pay for a $100,000 truck.
But then are they going to be like, yes, I buy into the lack of charging infrastructure, so I'm going to flip to a Lucid, not the Ford that I've been relying on forever?
Because they use it for a work truck, so probably not. This is going to be too, like, I don't know, luxury for that case, because they still get the use out of the, you know, King Ranch and stuff like that they're looking for.
Though, so if you say, kind of pondering that there's no need for a big luxury pickup in this market, why would you want it? The number of people who spend tens of thousands on ultra luxe camping gear to make camping easier and lighter and better for them. Like, oh, I've got a tent that you press a button and it just inflates itself and it does this. Oh, I've got this stove that does this. I need this gadget. This will keep me dry no matter the weather. This will do this. This will do that. My sleeping bag has been made from 1,000 plucked geese. That kind of,
but you, I bought you don't this, put I, down. I bought a this 20,000 deposit for an ultra luxe tent and then wait 4 years.
No, that you don't do, but you do still want it when it's there. And people buy the £500 ski jacket for, you know, the 1 week of the year where they actually need to use it. And then they kind of put it on occasionally when the weather's a bit grim outside. So I can see the mindset behind it, and I can see the people that would buy it. And Lacey, you look like you have something you want to say.
Well, I was just saying, it reminds me a lot of people that ride road bikes, even though they're not competitive with it, that, like, every little millimeter, they'll spend, like, thousands and thousands of extra dollars just to, like, eke out the performance of it. It's just, that reminds me of that.
Yes, the phenomenon of the mammil, if you're not familiar, it's a middle-aged man in Lycra. They spend lots and lots and lots of money on carbon road bikes and have a lovely time in the countryside. One of my friends is a confirmed mammil. He has a collection of push bikes, all of them amazing, and I could never afford one in my life. But no, I'm
probably mistakenly looking at this from the perspective of a poor person. Therefore, I'm like, why the hell would anyone buy one of these? But, like,
I think that's the average experience, though.
Yeah. I mean, thinking about it, if Lucid does go this route and does go for the right ultra luxe pickup, this is what will happen. Think about a little bit how Tesla ingratiated itself with the market. It didn't start with the Model 3. I mean, it should have done, but it didn't start with it. It started with a very expensive Roadster. Admittedly, that was, you know, cutting edge frontier tech 10, 11 years ago, and it was a Lotus, but still. And then it went for the big expensive sedan, which Lucid has done. Then it went for the big expensive SUV, which Lucid is doing now. And then, admittedly, Tesla went down the model, the 3 and the Y, and they got the early adoption in. But back then, the market, it was a lot more difficult to convince people into EVs because they weren't as prevalent. The market wasn't as big. It was, you know, the product development, when people said, oh, it'll do 300 miles of range or XYZ, it took a while for people to believe that that was a thing, because it wasn't at that point. You know, you're previously an EV, especially on this side of the pond, you had like a G-Wiz, which is basically, you know, a wheelie bin with a 9-volt battery in it, and was hideously, like, look at the crash tests for those things. They're scary to look at. Or you had a Nissan Leaf, or you had a Tesla. That was kind of it for ages. Whereas now Lucid's going into a space where, you know, people want the choice because they might have had the Tesla, or they might have the Rivian, or they might be looking at the Fords and the GM stuff and going, all right, who can provide me with a product that I I want in this space. And now, because EVs are the in thing, and because there are globally various mandates that mean they are going to have to be a thing, it might weirdly be a logical step rather than the cheaper SUV, just keep it ultra lux, whether or not that works. I don't know. I'm just having a think.
I think that's quite a lot of showing you're working in order to get to a justification for this, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I personally, I just think that it's not very attractive. It's not, I mean, okay, it's a clay model, so we don't know anything about this, but so far, Lucid has not demonstrated any particularly unique features. Something like the gravity and its towing capacity might prove that there's something here that Lucid can do that other manufacturers are not providing. Because, yeah, that luxury shaving a few millimeters off your road bike market want tech specs. They want this to be kind of like tricked out. They want stuff like a HUD. They don't want clumsy kind of Tesla-esque, what now looks like very budget options in an EV, features. So if Lucid is going to get this right and actually sell it, then, and we don't know, because they might have just been like, hey, let's make a model, bye. Personally, I do not see a space and we were talking about this like a couple of weeks ago. There is a generally slowing global car market. People have less money available. There is a squeeze in these kind of segments. And particularly it is hitting EVs. Do I think we need another expensive EV? No, not really. I mean, like, it's Lucid's stock at the end of the day, and it doesn't matter to me. But like, it is what it is.
I think as it's probably a good enough time to say we are undecided on the Lucid pickup, but it's also time to say goodbye to Lacey, who has to get on a jet plane and fly far away.
Sorry guys. No. I didn't plan this out as good as I thought I did. But
to be fair, your dedication to literally being on the podcast from your plane seat is quite
dedicated.
I mean, yeah, that is to be applauded and celebrated. So we will see you next time.
In a couple
Have
weeks.
A safe flight. See you in a couple of weeks.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Right, Hazel.
Talk about Peugeots again.
Let's talk about Peugeots and Lotuses and things like that. So yeah, Lucid pickup is a thing. We'll see what they do with it. On the Lecky pickup note, though, I'm not sure how close attention you were paying to the internet this week. I am, of course, terminally online. But there was a picture going around of the Cybertruck, and someone tried to put a bicycle in the back of it and it wouldn't fit, which just seems like really stellar product design there for the lifestyle vehicle. But that's...
I think it probably would fit on its side, to be fair.
It didn't. It was sort of back was. Yeah, no. If go look it up. It's a bit tragic. We almost went a week.
The Cybertruck content terrible. Was it failing to go up a hill?
Oh, did it fail to do that as well?
Well, I mean, it did make it, but it made it in roughly the same. I mean, to be fair, sometimes it's hard to tell whether it's the car or the driver. Could be a skill issue, could be a mechanical issue. And I'm not sure who was driving it, so I'm probably about to get some internet hate. But anyway, that's fine. But yeah, the two things that it's been notable for this week then are not really having any capacity as a truck if you can't get a bike in the back.
Or being able to go off-road.
Yes.
Hmm. Can't wait to drive it. I don't think they'll ever let me near one, which is fair. One final thing to talk about this week. Our man, Kevin Williams, Inside EVs' latest chap, lovely human being, incredible writer. Last week was, of course, Polestar Day, where Polestar had its own sort of look at how great we are show out in the US. Showed off a load of products, gave great insight into what's coming in the future, but it also gave journalists an opportunity to have a ride in the Polestars 3 and 4. And this week we're going to talk about the Polestar 3 and Kevin's ride in that. He seemed to really like it. He rightly said it's going to compete against the Audi Q8, the BMW iX. They're saying 83,000 US. He was generally impressed. The thing that gets me is it shares a platform with the Volvo EX90, which was revealed last year with its LiDAR that sort of sticks out on top, makes it like a taxi cab. It's a lot neater here in the Polestar 3. My question is, why would you go for the Volvo over the Polestar or vice versa? Because it seems to be quick. He seems to have enjoyed it. He said the interior was okay. But he says, Polestar still has yet to beat this. This is just a Volvo thing. What do you think, Hazel? What are your thoughts?
So I'm a bit of a Volvo, not hater at all, actually. One, I am obsessed with the Volvo Trucks YouTube channel, which if you are not subscribed to it, you absolutely should be. They put out the most deranged content I have ever seen in my life. And it's wonderful, including a video that implied that their trucks were like making sweet love.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Yeah. not a Volvo hater, but the thing about Volvos is that they are incredibly boring cars that have impossibly high safety ratings. That is their whole thing.
I mean, their whole jam is they want a vehicle that is incapable of causing death
or an accident.
That's the whole jam.
Yeah. So it's the opposite of like the Lucid bleed your eyes out launch control kind of thing. It's this is the safest this vehicle can possibly be. There is nothing wrong with that. Volvo is not a track car brand. It is not Porsche. It's not, and also bluntly, most of us wouldn't know how to use a car on the track anyway.
I've been doing this for 15 years and I'm still terrible at track driving.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I optimistically like to think I would manage to take a EX90 round of track without crashing it.
Fingers
mostly
crossed.
Because it would stop me. But anyway, the Indy, stop screaming. Sorry, my cat's trying to be on the podcast. She clearly has views about Volvo.
It's a podcast.
Yes. that brand assurance of this is the safest car you can possibly buy. You can put everyone you love in it and everything you love in it and they will be safe. And that is the whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why you'd go for, and I know that Polestar is Volvo and Volvo is Polestar, and then kind of there's a lot of synergies there, but I don't know why you'd go for the kind of challenger brand over the Volvo, aside from that aesthetic with the LiDAR.
The Volvo's more expensive.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, or at least it was last year. That might have changed in the fullness of time. But if it rides as well as Kevin says it does, and I have no reason to doubt it, with a pre-prod, a few things left to be changed, full car will be next year. I hope it'll be a success, because I do see loads of Polestar 2s around. I'm hoping it will do well for them. But who knows? Anyway, I think that about rounds us out for the week. We have a little bit of housekeeping to do. One, please continue to visit insideevs.com, comment on all the news. If you want to talk to us, please send us an email at contact@insideevs.com. Next week, we are going to have the week off because, unlike Hazel and I, America is having a large public holiday that involves being thankful. It's Thanksgiving. So day after Thanksgiving, everybody have your turkey comas, do some fun things with friends and family. We will be back the week afterwards, which is
do a like Peugeot exclusive podcast.
We should. We should. But you know what the really scary thing is? Our next podcast will be in December. It'll be Friday, December the 1st, which is horrifying. Where's the year gone? As ever, huge thanks to our producer, our man behind the scenes, who's been flipping the pictures and making sure we sound and look beautiful, Danny Howard. For now, Hazel and I will say goodbye and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye. We're waving. I'm still waving, even though the stream's off.